Vince Cable has joined me in the studio. He's got a book out at the moment called After the Storm, The World Economy and Britain's Economic Future. Lovely to see you again.
Thank you.
I have to say, you're looking very well. Obviously, being out of Parliament has done you a lot of good.
Yes, well, you know, being Secretary of State was a massive job. I enjoyed doing it. I got a lot of satisfaction from it, but it takes a lot out of you. It's hard work.
Before we get on to the substance of your book, I just want to ask you about the events of today in the House of Commons. The Prime Minister talking about the number of refugees, saying we should take 20,000 over 5 years, and also giving details of this drone strike against a British jihadist. What's your reaction to that, first of all? Can it ever be right to kill a British citizen overseas?
Well, if it was self-defence, and that's the argument that's been advanced, and if it was to prevent a terrorist outrage, then I can fully understand it. I think this is at the kind of murky area of British military intervention in Syria. I have to say, when I was in the cabinet when we discussed this, I broadly took the view that it was illogical to have actions in Iraq but not in Syria when you're dealing with the same people and there's no border. But Parliament has to be persuaded that that's right. I'm sure they will be. And from what I've heard of this case, and obviously we only know a little bit, it seems justifiable.
How do you think on the refugee issue, how do you think government policy would be different if the Liberal Democrats were part of the government?
I think it would have been different. I don't think David Cameron would have got himself into the position he did, where he became very, very isolated and out of tune with opinion. I think we would have said from the outset that there is a massive humanitarian crisis. We've got to play our role in it. I'm glad that belatedly they have accepted that we should do our bit. I think it's roughly comparable to what France is undertaking to do. I think the one mean niggling thing is this suggestion that the costs have got to be paid for out of the aid budget. You know, taking money from Tanzanian peasants or Bangladeshi poor people in order to pay for it is just mean and petty. It's not like that, though, is it?
Because I mean, I actually came up with this idea a week ago, so blame me for it. But I mean, I think it is aid. I mean, that surely is what most people in this country think of as aid, helping people out of a crisis, and if it's used to house them or bring them to this country, that's a legitimate way of using the money.
Well, I mean, if I want to be, you know, bureaucratic about it, I mean, there is a formal way of defining aid, and that the Western world has a way of agreeing it, and it certainly, I'm pretty certain, would not cover paying local authorities for the cost of resettling refugees. I mean, the fact is, when you have an emergency, if it's, say, a military conflict, the Treasury finds the money from the contingency reserve. Mm. That's the way we do things. I think this, frankly, was just a gesture to his right wing to say, look, you know, we're being soft on refugees because that's the way the public is, but we're going to show how tough we are by taking some money from the aid budget. I think that's petty.
Message would be, if the Liberal Democrats had still been in government, it would have been a much more compassionate government.
I think it would have been somewhat more compassionate, and I think we would have got the message rather quicker, and I think we would have been more inclined than David Cameron has been to work with the rest of the European Union, certainly with Angela Merkel.
But when you look at the amount of money that Britain has provided to the region, I mean, we are the second biggest donor after the United States. We've given double that of Germany many times from France. Yeah. Do you not think that that is evidence of compassion?
It is, and it's positive. And I think one of the real achievements of the coalition government that we didn't get enough credit for, both Tories and Lib Dems, is the fact that we did maintain our aid budget in very difficult times. There was enormous pressure, particularly from some of the newspapers, to cut back on it, and we didn't. I think David Cameron personally deserves a lot of credit for that. And spoiling it at this stage with this petty little cut doesn't seem to me very creditable.
Let's turn to the subject of your book. It's subtitled The World Economy and Britain's Economic Future. I mean, you cover a lot of ground in it. When we look at what's happened in the past few weeks in China, for example, it shows that the world's financial markets are still very unstable and that there could be another crash coming, maybe from China, maybe elsewhere. Is that something you subscribe to, that we may have another crash at some point?
I take the view that the world economy and the British economy are still weak. I mean, we're still on life support. You know, we have this extraordinary experiment with cheap money. There's been research at the Bank of England which shows the world has got lower interest rates than at any time since Hammurabi and long before Christ, you know, some centuries ago. And this extraordinary process can't continue. There are a lot of dangers out there. Most of the world economies are growing below potential. That includes even the more successful ones, like the United States. China, I think, will probably pull out of this immediate crisis, but it's going to grow slower, for sure. It was growing in the wrong kind of way, pumping out manufacturing goods into world markets. They can't keep doing that. And so we are into a period of slower growth. And I think one of my main warnings in the book is that although we are, you know, very positive at the moment about the UK, and I think we emerged from the coalition government with a reasonably good story about recovery, there are a lot of dangers because interest rates are going to go up in future years. At the same time, George Osborne is squeezing the budget much more toughly than we would have done if we'd continued in government. And the two things together, combined with all these problems in China and elsewhere, could take us back into a bad period in a couple of years' time.
You don't like Mr. Osborne, do you?
No, I do. I like personally. I have a high regard for him. Oh, yes. And I think you'll see this in the book. He's a highly intelligent guy, a good listener. Very affable. I had, you know, very good conversations with him. But I did disagree with him on issues of policy. And I think, you know, one has got to get used to that in politics. You can disagree with people on issues, but at the same time have respect for them and have a good working relationship.
I mean, he's now the front runner to succeed David Cameron. What kind of prime minister do you think he'd make?
Well, I think it is an issue of timing. It's a little bit like the Blair-Brown relationship. I mean, and it links to what I said earlier. I think we are heading for economic trouble. I can't be absolutely certain, but I think some of the warning signs are there. So I think if he is going to take over from David Cameron, he's got to do so reasonably quickly.
Do you think that he has insulated the British economy insofar as any Chancellor can in this globalised economy? Do you think he's insulated the economy enough against a future crash?
No, we're not insulated. We are very open to pressures. The main dangers, actually, are still in the Eurozone, but, you know, there are other things that could happen. And on the external front, we're actually, you know, being helped at the moment by very low oil prices. So the world operates in different ways. Now, I think the British economy is still very vulnerable. I think in the longer term, what we have done, despite some of the good work that was done in the coalition under what I used to call the industrial strategy and training and apprenticeships and supporting science, I think we're still very weak as a country in those kind of long-term drivers. This recovery is still very much driven by rising house prices, credit, you know, the kind of thing that we've had before and leads us into trouble.
A couple of weeks' time, it's the Liberal Democrat Party conference. Will you be going?
I will go. I will
be
taking
a
back
seat.
Do you think
it's going to be a bit of a wake?
It will be a wake because we had a terrible election. There's no way of disguising that. But I think we now begin to see the positive things coming along the track. We've got a new leader, I think an absolutely right man for the situation we're in. We're beginning to win back ground, albeit a little, in my own constituency. For example, a couple of weeks after the general election, we won back a very safe Conservative council seat. And these things are beginning to happen. And I think with the Labour Party potentially jumping off a cliff, there is an enormous scope for sensible people in the middle of the road or centre-left, whatever you choose to describe us, who are competent on economic matters but also compassionate. Enormous millions of people will be unrepresented if Jeremy Corbyn comes to the fore, and there's a space there for us to occupy.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point because, of course, you left the Labour Party to join the SDP because of policies similar to the ones that Jeremy Corbyn is about to advocate.
Yeah, I think he was one of the main actors at that time, actually.
So you think that there is maybe in the longer term, maybe not initially, but maybe in a couple of years' time, that the Liberal Democrats could really gain from the fact that the Labour Party might be splitting?
It could. I don't see at the moment another SDP. There's no Roy Jenkins there. There's no immediate issue. And I think what they're all hoping is that Jeremy Corbyn will turn out to be less fearsome than his Marxist-Leninist past, and that he will become a kind of Ken Livingstone figure who actually was rather successful as a politician. I think that's what they're hoping. But I think the gulf is so big that I can't see it being sustained, and I think they are going to have serious problems.
Do you think he'll win more seats than Ed Miliband?
I would be very surprised. I mean, if you're a kind of frightened middle-class voter, the kind of people who were turned off by Ed Miliband, why would you move even further?
Final question. I mean, it must be a shock to anybody when they lose their seat in the circumstances that you did. Psychologically, how have you adapted to that? Because one day you've got the government car, your diary's chock-a-block with things, and the next day it's all gone.
Well, the diary, certainly. I didn't make much use of government cars. I used to go on public transport, but I'll leave that up one side. No, it is a hell of a break. It is very difficult to deal with. I dealt with it partly because I have a very supportive family, and I always have, and lovely wife, and so on. But what I did immediately is I got into writing my book and you know, getting busy and trying to make myself useful.
What about the future?
Well, I will keep on writing.
Strictly Come Dancing?
I've boosted my dancing. I go regularly once a week. Yesterday I was in Cambridge for the heats for the national championship. So
you'd love to do it, wouldn't you?
I'm going into Strictly Come Dancing has passed me by this
next
year.
Next year,
well, we'll see.
I'll almost lay a bet with you that you'll be in it. Not the House of Lords, though. You're not going to go.
No to the House of Lords. I've had 18 years in Parliament. I want to say goodbye to that. And frankly, it's overcrowded, it's unreformed. You know, why would I want to be the 900th member of the House of Lords?
What do you think about your Lib Dem colleagues who did accept
the peerage? Well, I'm not criticising them. They, you know, have good reasons for doing it. I decided no.
Vince Cable, thank you very much indeed. Well, Vince's book is called After the Storm, The World Economy and Britain's Economic Future. It's out now in hardback at $18.99 from Atlantic Books.